Good evening, listeners. It is Thursday, April 20th, and thank you for joining us here on We've Got the Frequency, Kenneth. I'm Alexa Battler with Fatima Al-Sayed, Leah Sheffield, and Sarah Bola. We've got a full show today packed with the latest in news and entertainment. Then, later on, we've got some fascinating guests to hear from. It's 6 degrees in Toronto today. We've been getting a taste of the April showers for the day. Let's hope the Mayflowers are on their way. You're in for a great show tonight, folks, but first we've got a quick word from our sponsors.
Hi, honey. How was school today?
Something embarrassing happened, Dad.
What is it, dear?
I got my period during class, and I wasn't prepared.
Oh, honey, don't worry. Try these always ultra-thin pads with flexi wings.
But why ultra-thin, Dad?
So no one will notice that bulky maxi pad in your new white pants. Plus, the leak guard core absorbs in seconds for up to 8 hours of protection.
Thanks, Dad. Now I'll be able to stash these ultra-thin pads anywhere. But first, can you wash my white pants?
That's disgusting.
Get ready, folks, because we've got the latest for you. Now for the news in Toronto. The Ontario government made a move today to start cooling Ontario's scorching hot housing market. Premier Kathleen Wynne said that people who don't live in Canada will now have to pay a 15% tax to buy houses in southern Ontario. In the Greater Toronto Area alone, the average price of a house rose about 33% in the last year. The Toronto Police Services Board had to cancel their meeting this afternoon after journalist and activist Desmond Cole started protesting. He was talking in a deputation about carding and said he wouldn't leave until the police agreed to stop using the information they got from carding. The board ended the meeting 10 minutes after Cole told them he wasn't leaving. Now I'll send it over to Fatima for what's going on in the international news.
Thanks, Alexa. I'm Fatima Al-Sayed with the latest international news. In Venezuela, three people were killed yesterday during a protest against the government. One teenager, 17-year-old Carlo Moreno, one woman, 23-year-old Paula Ramirez, and one National Guard who was killed by a sharpshooter. People were protesting to demand a new presidential election and the release of jailed politicians. In Tennessee, a 50-year-old teacher who abducted his 15-year-old student was found today. Officials say the teacher lured and sexually exploited the girl. Tad Cummins was arrested on charges of sexual contact with a minor and aggravated kidnapping. That's all for tonight in news. Now to Leah.
Thanks, Fatima, and hi, everyone. I'm Leah Sheffield with All the Buzz and Entertainment. 68-year-old fitness icon Richard Simmons wrote a post on Facebook to reassure his fans that he is, in fact, fine. He was hospitalized earlier this week for severe indigestion. He thanked his fans for their concern and said that he's just a little under the weather. Simmons has not been seen publicly since 2014, after he stopped showing up to teach his exercise classes and stopped speaking to his friends, sparking rumors that he is ill. And that's all from me. Let's send it over to Sarah for more entertainment.
Thanks, Leah. After 15 years away from the spotlight, Shania Twain is back with new music and a guest appearance on the competitive singing reality show, The Voice. Shania returns to the music scene after undergoing voice therapy. In 2011, she was diagnosed with the vocal disorder dysphonia. In an interview with Rolling Stone magazine, Shania said she now has a deeper voice. Revenge thriller Unforgettable hits theaters tomorrow. Katherine Heigl stars as a vengeful ex who stalks her husband's new wife, played by Rosario Dawson. Stay with us, because coming up in our segment, Frequent Questions for Kenneth, we explore the controversy around Declawing, a local art show, and special guests join us to talk about a new website launched in Toronto and the Netflix original series 13 Reasons Why.
Cravings? Introducing Orville Redenbacher's Naturals Popcorn. Delicious gourmet whole grain popcorn. Only 130 calories and zero trans fat per serving. All the same great flavor with no guilt. Available in lime and salt, garlic butter, simply salted and zesty pepper butter. Naturals Popcorn. Available in your local grocery store.
We'll be right back.
Hello, everyone. I hope you're all ready for part two of We've Got the Frequency, Kenneth. I'm Alexa Battler with Fatima Al-Sayed, Leah Sheffield, and Sarah Bola, and we're here live from the East York campus of Centennial College. Today, on Frequent Questions for Kenneth, you're going to be hearing from some great guests. We're starting with the hot-button issue in America that's making its way up to Canada, declawing. New Jersey is set to have the first statewide ban on declawing in America. The bill just has to be approved by the state Senate. Now, some places in Canada are considering making the surgery illegal, too. The Nova Scotia Veterinary Medical Association met yesterday to talk about whether or not they'll advocate to make declawing illegal in Nova Scotia. This would be the first province-wide ban in Canada. We don't have any updates on that meeting so far, but I talked to registered veterinary technician Kristen Wallace about what she thinks when it comes to making declawing illegal. She works at one of the few vet clinics in Toronto that still practices declawing, but she thinks declawing should be illegal.
How did you feel about performing the surgery?
I don't like them. I don't like doing them. I think they should be illegal because it's like pretty much amputation. You're kind of just taking off the ends of their toes, right? I don't think it's necessary. I think it's an unnecessary procedure, but it is part of the job, so you just kind of have to suck it up and do it kind of thing, I guess.
Did you feel guilty?
Yes, kind of. Yeah, I wasn't a fan of it. Didn't like it afterwards. Kind of felt bad for the cat, but yeah, you just kind of gotta push through it. Mm-hmm.
Are there any circumstances under which you would refuse to declaw a cat?
If I could, like if I could say no, but I guess I feel like it's here. It's gonna happen. I'll do the best I can. But I would love it if like our clinic just said no to everybody.
Some people who have immunodeficiencies, mm-hmm. like HIV/AIDS, or people who have who take blood thinners, mm-hmm. if they get scratches for HIV/AIDS, they can get cat scratch disease, and for blood thinners, they can bleed too much and have health issues in that sense. Do you think then there's possible justification?
The thing is most people do front declaws instead of back declaws, so there is like unless they did a full four paw. Declaw, then that would be a possibility. They would just have to know the risks. If a bone is left, the claw can grow back. There can be like lameness from it too. But usually, once they lose their claws, if they are an aggressive cat, they can turn to biting too. But you know, the owners can't. It's mostly the furniture thing. All I hear is the cat scratches the furniture.
I think the need to home cats mm-hmm. who are in shelters should outweigh the disdain over getting them declawed.
I think there's going to be more cats in shelters, whether they're declawed or not. It's just their breeding cycle. They can go into heat pretty much on command. You put them introduced to a male cat, they can go into heat. So I think the stray cat issue is just going to bring in more cats, whether they're declawed or not. Maybe people who want their cats to be declawed might help bring out a little bit, but I still think the shelters will be full all the time.
So you do believe that it should be illegal? Overall.
I think so, yeah. I think, again, it falls under the same line as all the other cosmetic things we do with the dogs and that, you know, the ear cropping, tails, docking, declaw removing even.
What do you think should happen to people who still practice declawing if it was illegal?
If it was illegal? If they still did it? If it was illegal and they're still performing it, they should get some kind of punishment there. I'm not going to say, like, jail time or anything, unless they kept doing it, I guess. Kind of like one of those, like, I guess like a fine or maybe a little suspension or something, because then they're practicing something that's illegal, right?
In New Jersey, their proposal, if people did go and practice it anyways, they would have mm-hmm. a fine of $1,000 or 6 months in jail.
Oh, wow.
Or both.
Yeah, okay.
And this is for vets practicing it and people who pursue it, as well as a civil penalty of between $500 and $2,000.
Wow.
Do you think this is an appropriate punishment?
The people pursuing it, not sure if they should get like a 6 month jail time. I mean, because people, again, aren't informed, right? So they might just go, I want to declaw. But they don't know the information behind it, so I don't think that's an appropriate punishment for them. But yeah, again, like the fine thing should be for the doctors, and that I guess if they kept doing it, I'm not sure about the jail time. I don't know if they deserve jail time for that. I think that might be a little extreme, but like a suspension or something for a short term on their license, maybe. Mm-hmm. Something like that.
That was registered veterinary technician Kristen Wallace speaking to myself, Alexa Battler, about her thoughts on making declawing illegal in Canada. Now I'll send it over to Fatima for our first live interview of Frequent Questions for Kenneth.
Thanks, Alexa. Hi, I'm Fatima. It's been a trying time for journalists in the media lately with Donald Trump's allegations that most news is fake news. A lot of youth have been more and more engaged with the political world. One platform that has made it their mission to get the youth voice out into the world is The Blank Page. It's an online site that was founded and launched from Toronto, but hopes to reach people all over the globe. One of the founders, Mariam Jamal, is live on the phone with us here tonight to give us a look into what her and her team are doing. Hi, Mariam, and welcome to Frequent Questions for Kenneth.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So our first question for you here tonight is, what is the mission and the goal of The Blank Page?
Great. So The Blank Page is a not-for-profit organization that primarily operates on an online platform right now. And the goal is to engage youth and young adults and encourage them to share information, pursue new opportunities, and delve beyond their limitations through the written, digital, and artistic form, while connecting with one another online.
So why did you and your team decide to launch this platform?
My team and I kind of got together and we realized that we were all very outspoken and engaged individuals, and that growing up, especially in high school and early university, we lacked the right kind of platform that could not only allow us to express our views, but one that would also accommodate our inexperience and support our individual and intellectual growth. So The Blank Page became a platform where young people can get together in more centralized space to take part in dialogue about various different topics, from health and science to the environment to global affairs, all while sort of experimenting and being exposed to different views in the hopes that they broaden their horizons.
And how successful has it been in achieving its goal?
I think starting out, we had all we'd all been contributors or wrote or edited in different capacities, but none of us had really tried to build a platform from the ground up, so it's definitely been a learning experience. We're still in our infancy, so there's quite a ways to go, but our platform has been steadily growing and engaging more and more people. It was especially encouraging when people, started to seek us out to write for us instead of, just us relying on reaching out to people ourselves. So it reaffirmed that this was something that people were interested in and that people wanted it, and we're so grateful to have that kind of support as we move forward.
Can you tell us about a couple challenges that you and your team have faced throughout the process of launching this new platform?
Sure. I think one of the biggest challenges we faced is navigating social media presence. Mm-hmm. So none of us had really immersed ourselves in social media to the extent where we'd really explored or even were aware of different strategies to reach audiences. So for the first little while, we were generating content, but it wasn't really reaching the right audiences. So it's been a learning process of doing that research, figuring out the best methods to reach the right audience we were interested in, and simultaneously engaging the right kind of people who would be interested in this kind of platform.
And those would be challenges of every new platform. Mm-hmm. Why is it important to have a platform like this available for youth now more than ever?
So I think a lot of the time youth voices are either disregarded or drowned out in general under the guise that, they lack the perspective or experience to be able to comment on current issues. That's especially prevalent in the first few years of university, where the understanding is that, profs and TAs aren't necessarily, especially in fields like social science, aren't necessarily interested in your own opinion or perspective on something so much as they want to, they just want you to be able to relay information back to them. So, and this is a case where few exceptions are made. And in this political climate, this dynamic has become more pronounced, where the focus has been on, professionals and political analysts, which, isn't a bad thing, but in doing so, you're not listening or you're not providing the opportunity for young people to really comment or engage with these different topics. So with the cultivation of The Blank Page, we're committed to highlighting and amplifying these youth voices, concerns, and interests, because we know from our own experience that this kind of exposure to one another and to different ideas and perspectives is so crucial to our growth. We can't be expected to formulate well-thought-out views without expressing our current ones and engaging in meaningful dialogue about different issues.
And where do you see The Blank Page in 5 years' time?
That is a tough question. I think, as anyone would, we aim to make the platform self-sustaining and grow our audience and gain a lot more contributors, get a lot more engagement from from readers in the comments section and stuff. But at the same time, we're conscious of the fact that we're providing a service of sorts, and we're ready to steer the organization in the direction that best complements the needs and interests of our target audience, which is youth, which could include expanding to different platforms or services and definitely broadening our reach to a more global scale.
That was Maryam Jamal, a recent Peace, Conflict, and Justice Studies graduate from U of T, who, with her team, is trying to open up the platform for youth to gain knowledge and have a safe place to contribute their work. In a moment, we'll have Leo, who will tell us about an art show in Toronto.
Hi everyone, I'm Leah. As the school year comes to a close, Centennial College second year fine arts students celebrated their work at Mercurial, an art show at the Toronto Centre for the Arts. The show ran from March 29th to April 11th. It featured the work of over 20 artists. I sat down with program director David McClimate at the opening reception to discuss the show.
How long has the show been happening? It's every year?
Yeah, so fine arts is 2 years. I would say that, like, in terms of learning to be an artist, is maybe 3-4 broad categories. The one that everybody thinks of is technique. The next thing would be maybe concept. And so one of the things that I think is hugely important is it's a fabulous image. How do you get the public interested in it? So things like really basic things, like in that room, how high to hang a painting? How many works can you put on the wall? What should the label look like? How do I get a gallery interested in me? How do I organize my portfolio? What do I need to know about contracts, insurance, copyright, all that stuff? So the professional practices part, I think, makes the fine arts studio program really unique. Technical stuff, conceptual stuff, those people, fabulous, fabulous artists. But what they've also learned, hopefully, is, okay, what's going to happen to me the day after I graduate, right? So this show, then, is sort of an extension of that whole process, is, okay, and as I said, these folks, they organized it themselves. And so everything about this show, besides the celebration of their artwork, I think is really key for them to learn what to expect going out into the real world.
So do they have to negotiate placement of where their art goes?
And this is a big part of it. I mean, everything you're looking at in there is an extension of somebody's ego. And I say that quite honestly, my ego as well. I mean, there's something about being an artist that is intensely egocentric. That's why we do it. And we want people to have a discourse with us through our artwork. And so it's really, really difficult to sort of take that deep breath and tuck that part away. I'm part of a larger whole here, and the only way this is going to be successful for me is if the whole thing is successful for everybody. What we did is we tried to take a look at what worked. One of the big tasks was promotion, the actual act of promotion. One was the design of the promotional materials. One was organizing the artwork up here, the artwork back. And then another one was the install. There's probably at least 50 or more individual pieces in that show representing 20 different artists. So we knew that even though that's a big space, it was going to be a fair bit of mental gymnastics to figure out how to hang it. And they did a fabulous job. That work does not look crowded. None of it looks out of place. Everybody's work looks special.
So the work that's being featured today,
yes,
are those pieces that they created specifically for the art show?
Amongst other things, they teach them a class called Thesis, which is last term. It's multiple hours a week, and the idea is to give them the opportunity to take everything they've learned in every other class. You've got 3 months to basically make a body of work that probably, with some confidence, you could use as the basis for a solo show. And so a lot of the work that's in there are selections from their thesis, work that they've been doing over this past 3 months.
And you mentioned during your speech about the inspiration for the name of the show. Do you think you could explain a little bit more about where that came from?
Yeah. It's a group show, so we can't feature any one artist or any one artist's work or any one artist's sensibility. But we have to give it some kind of bag to put the work in, simply from the point of view of promotion. But it has to allow everybody's creative sensibility, so everybody feels that they're invested in the show. What happened in this room, what they started to talk about was the notion of how variable they all are. There's high-end realism through to full-on conceptual pieces through to total non-representation. So, okay, the overriding characteristic will be change. So Mercurial, and if you look it up, it's based on Mercury. It's constantly changing. So that's a really good word concept.
That was David McClyman, director of Centennial College's Fine Arts Program, talking to me about Mercurial, the second-year art show that was held at the Toronto Centre for the Arts.
Sarah Bola back again. The Netflix show 13 Reasons Why was released 3 weeks ago and has received mixed reviews. The show revolves around the aftermath of a teenage girl's suicide and the 13 tapes she left behind. The tapes describe a series of incidents and people who led her to suicide. Essentially, the tapes are the 13 Reasons Why. The show, produced by singer Selena Gomez, has been accused of glamorizing suicide and simplifying the complexities of mental health. A common critique from mental health professionals is that the imagery of such a graphic suicide may be harmful to vulnerable teenagers. Serena Bola is a grade 9 student from Ajax, Ontario, living with a diagnosis of clinical depression. Serena recently completed the series, and she is live on air with us to chat about her thoughts. Hi, Serena.
Hello.
So what initially drew you to watch 13 Reasons Why?
To be honest, a whole bunch of my friends were talking about it. I originally read the book when I was in middle school. I was in grade 8. I don't really remember it, but I thought the book was pretty good, and I decided to watch the show.
Okay. What did you think as the series unfolded?
It's very visual.
Like, what did you think of the main character, Hannah?
I liked her as a person.
Yeah.
I just think she had a lot going on, and Hannah seemed sick.
Okay.
And she showed, like, symptoms of it.
And have your friends seen the show?
Yes.
Friends who haven't been through any mental health issues?
No, my friends don't have any mental health issues.
So, what have they taken away from the show?
They thought it's very childish of her to blame her death on somebody else.
And the suicide scene is very graphic, and I know there's a warning to the viewer before that particular episode begins, but how did watching that make you feel?
To be honest, it made me feel quite upset.
Okay.
Because I remember a short period of time I was feeling like that, and I don't know, it kind of like brought back how I was feeling, and it just made me feel really upset to see other people feeling like that.
Did you regret watching it?
In a way, yes, because it was really graphic.
Did it bring back any feelings, or you just...
Yeah, brought back, like, times I would feel really down and I would have nothing else was better to do, which is not good. It always helps. But, I don't know, it's just, like, the kind of thing that you just convince yourself that it's really good to do.
Okay, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. That was Serena Bola, a grade 9 student who has been diagnosed with depression. Serena just spoke to me about the Netflix teen drama 13 Reasons Why, a show facing criticism for its depiction of mental health and suicide. Be sure to follow us on Twitter if you haven't already at Frequency Radio, one word. Stay dry this evening, folks, and we will meet again at 2 o'clock tomorrow. For everyone here at We've Got the Frequency Kenneth, I'm Sarah Bola. We hope you have a great night.